You're listening to a podcast appearing on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Green Gab Podcast, a place to gab with people rocking it in green. Green homes, green living, green companies. Join Marla Esser-Close, green home coach and author of Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices to a Better Home, and Tony Pratt, the director of builder relations at The Sound Room. Here are your hosts, Marla and Tony.
Hey, it's Marla Esser-Close with the Green Gab Podcast, and today we've got an exciting guest on from her own podcast, and this is Jackie Marie Beyer. And Jackie, good morning. How are you today?
I am awesome, Marla. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I know. I feel like it's been a while since we did it on your podcast, and now we get to turn the tables and do it on mine. So now okay. I get to pick on you.
Makes me more nervous, but I'll try to do my best.
Oh, come on. Now, how many podcasts have you done?
I just recorded my 226th interview with an expert like you. And that's what I was going to say is my show is really a success because of my listeners and because of my guests who are all dedicated to, I call my audience green future growers because we're all dedicated to growing a greener future.
Green future growers. I like that. I like that. Well, and I don't even remember how we got connected. I think one of us found the other show.
I found you on iTunes.
You found
iTunes,
me. That's right. You did.
I definitely did. I know. I was digging around too. I was like, where did I find Marla? I thought you were podcast with Paradise, but then I went and looked and you weren't in the Facebook group. So then I was like, well, where did I find her? And then I found an email I had sent you saying I found you on iTunes and let's connect.
Well, and I love that. I've actually, and you probably are finding this as well, I'm starting to connect with more and more podcasters as the podcast has been out longer and longer. So that's kind of cool. And for those of you that are listening that are new to podcasts, oh my gosh, you can find any topic out there. Just go to your podcast app and hit search and type in your favorite topic and you'll find something out there because there's just tons.
And, you know, the great things about podcasting is you can do it while you're driving or while you're exercising or while you're folding laundry, like during any kind of mundane task. And I don't know, I think once you start listening, it's hard to not listen, for me anyway, when I'm driving or doing any of those things. But the other amazing thing about podcasting that I love is the people you meet. And like,
yes.
I met a lady, one of my guests was somebody who was a mile from my house, a mile through the woods. And just, she has a wonderful garden and I've driven by it a million times. But when I asked her to be a guest on my show, like now I have a friend. I have tons of friends. Next weekend, I'm going to an event down in Kalispell near me. So I live in Northwest Montana. It's very rural. So I'm going to go 65 miles south of me is like your next door neighbor practically. And I'm going to see hundreds of friends that I have met through my podcast there. And just to me, it's a great way to meet like-minded people. And then almost every podcast has a Facebook group. So you can meet other people in your area through their Facebook group.
I need to start the Facebook group. I have not done that yet.
Oh, you'll love it. You'll never go back.
Thank you for that reminder. So got you started podcasting?
You know, it's funny. People keep asking me this. So I took a leadership class back in 2012 online, and we had to listen to Michael Hyatt's leadership podcast. And then I fell in love with that, but quickly, you know, binged on it and had listened. Because I live in Montana. I drive a lot. I'm in my car a lot. And then I love to go running in the woods with my dogs. And I even like now at the treadmill. So I love to listen when I'm exercising. So I binged on Michael Hyatt, listened to all of his This Is Your Life the first year. And that's where I found John Lee Dumas, who runs Entrepreneur on Fire. And I've listened to there's tons of other great podcasts out there, but John Lee Dumas, and then he started his Podcaster's Paradise, which is where I learned how to podcast.
Yep. I do remember this conversation. And I haven't listened to all of Michael Hyatt's, but I've listened to a fair number. Matter of fact, I just ordered the Focus Planner from Michael Hyatt. So I need to get myself started with that.
Yeah. I love Michael Hyatt.
He does some really great work. It really resonates with me.
And well, and his book Platform was essential for me when I was starting my podcast. I got real on my online website. I got really stuck on his first chapter, which is find what makes you special. And everybody always talks about finding your avatar, but I definitely nailed my avatar. I just made this video. It was like in response to this viral video about millennials, because I have a lot of millennials in my audience, and it's called Rockstar Millennial, because so many gardeners are millennial, and millennials are so interested in caring for their environment and caring for people. hearing, but they love their technology too. So, but a lot of new gardeners and farmers are women, because somebody I just interviewed talked about 60% of the new farmers in Pennsylvania are women between the age, I think, of 24 and 35 or something, just right in that age.
Wow. Okay. I had no clue, but it makes sense. Women are standing up and owning it all, and, you know, just across our society right now.
Yeah. And also women are concerned with healthy eating, because they're the ones that, you know, when you get pregnant and you have a child to care for, all of a sudden your whole thought about food and what you're cooking and what you're putting in your body changes radically.
Yes.
I mean, even though I never was pregnant, I've seen it again and again. And many of my guests have said that. And I saw it with my stepdaughter. It was amazing, the transformation when she had her first son, and just.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, we've got this big concern over what goes in our bodies, food, what goes on our bodies, you know, personal care products. And then the next step is where our bodies live, which is your home. So they all interrelate.
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest theme on my show has definitely been soil health, healthy food. Growing a garden really comes down. It doesn't matter if you're growing in a pot, if you're growing a couple of small deep beds, or if you're growing a huge garden, it all starts with soil. And composting is, you know, just so huge and so easy. And I often talk about, like, if you were going to ask me that question about what do most people not know, my listeners will know this, but your listeners might not know. I used to, before I had my podcast, say I had a brown thumb. Now, I have learned some things. I've taken on some gardening. I've definitely been inspired. But generally, I could barely keep a geranium alive and a basil plant. And
sounds like me.
I was not the gardener. My husband's the gardener. And I hated to garden when I was a kid. My mom's like always like, how did my daughter get a gardening podcast and is interested in this? Because she couldn't get me in the garden for the life of her.
You just remember pulling weeds?
Yeah.
That was me.
So hot and sweaty and yucky, and who wants to be dirty, and just who wants to be outside when you could be inside where it's cool on a hot summer day, whereas my mom thrived out in the hot. But the thing about it is, well, one, composting is really so easy. It's so forgivable. It's such an easy thing to do. But the other thing I wanted to say to your listeners, I think especially will be interested in, one of my most popular episodes is actually one I did with my brother, who lives on Long Island in the suburbs, and him and his wife don't vegetable garden, but they landscape. Because another big theme on my show has been the chemicals people put on their lawns, where your pets are running, where your toddlers are learning how to crawl, they're playing hide and seek. They're constantly, and their little itty bitty bodies are so much closer and so much more intensely affected by those things.
I agree.
Another thing I was going to mention is, like, so I'm a teacher. I teach elementary school. Last year, I took my second graders to this field trip to Glacier National Park. And she did this game with them where she lined up all these chairs and they had to hop from chair to chair to chair to chair. And that was easy. But then she would take away a chair. And then she would take away a chair. And the chairs were places the birds and the bees could go and they could find habitat that was healthy for them. And every time she took away a chair, it was supposed to represent, here, we're putting a mall here. Here, we're putting a building here. Here, we're building a factory here. And then the kids had to jump further and further and further between each chair. And it was just huge. The kids could really feel, because, you know, kids were getting eliminated. You know, it's kind of like musical chairs, but different. The ones who couldn't hop from chair to chair, and as the chairs were getting further and further apart, and eventually, you know, there were three chairs 15 feet apart, and the kids couldn't jump, you know, by them. But so then she asked, what can we do to help the birds and the bees who are losing all their places to land? And the kids said, well, we could build more backyard gardens. We could build, you know, we could put a pond here. We could put all these things back. And so then she'd start putting a chair back in between. And then the kids could see how they could jump. And this is a way for people to think about, you can make a little habitat. So there's a little place, and you'll be surprised by how many, if all you want to do is plant flowers, if all you want to do is put a fruit tree in to invite, give the environment a place, give the animals, the insects, the birds, the bees, it'll make your community, if you're just not putting chemicals on your lawn and going naturally. And to me, it all starts with composting. I mean, there's other things you can do, manure and stuff, but if you're in the suburbs, and composting, and it's so interesting, the difference between me and my brother, because he makes like one thing of compost a year. Like, you know, they start in the spring, they collect their stuff all winter or all summer. They just put it to rest under the leaves in the fall, let it sit. They've got their one bin of compost in the spring. Whereas my husband has what I call the mini farm, which is like, I don't know, a quarter of an acre to a third of an acre. We lived for 6 years without running water. So we started with just like a 4x8 bed. And then he's just built on and built on and put more fence. And so we have a pretty big garden area around our house and just finding dirt for all that. So we have like, I don't know, 2 compost bins up here. And then I think he's got 3 down by the mini farm. And then we're always trying to find sources of manure. I always tell people our chickens are for the manure. The eggs are just the bonus. I mean, there's just, you know, your soil health is key, but even if you're not a vegetable gardener, landscaping is so important. And just, yeah, you know, making sure that you're building a great place, you know, bringing in the bees, bringing in the butterflies, giving the birds a place will improve everything.
That is such a huge point. And that's also, I want to come back and talk more about that, but let's take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Green Gap.
Wouldn't it be cool if your advertising could last forever? It can with Perpetual Advertising. Here's how it works. Unlike TV or radio ads, where every instance the ads are broadcast, they're only played once and lost forever. Perpetual advertising can have repeat exposure and replayability weeks, months, and even years after they're inserted in a podcast. So even if a podcast is a few years old, your ads will still be impactful to repeat listeners, as well as new listeners. This gives your advertising dollar the most bang for the buck. Find out more about Perpetual Advertising at twoguystalking.com/sponsors.
Check out the book, Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices for a Better Home, to make simple changes to buying habits that affect a home both inside and out. Marla Esser-Close shows consumers ways to make any home a green home. Get the book now at livinggreenbook.com. That's livinggreenbook.com.
You can try and learn about voiceover all by yourself, or you can get you and your voice to school. Check out Voice Farmers Voiceover Academy today and learn how you can make money with your voice. It's all available over at voicefarmers.com. That's voicefarmers.com.
Hey, we're back gabbing with Jackie about her podcast, Organic Gardener. And Jackie, you've just had so many opportunities to learn so much, not only from working in your own garden, but from all the guests that you've had on. And before the break, we were talking about soil health. And this is something I'm reading in so, so many places that is a big, big, big issue. You really were starting to elaborate on things you can do to improve your soil health and how important it is to raising food or even just landscaping. Tell us a little bit more.
Everything grows based on healthy soil. And I guess what I feel about it is like I grew up with a cardboard milk container on my kitchen counter that my mom always threw the scraps into, you know, eggshells, coffee grounds, any kind of like, you know, when you're making a salad, you know, the tops to the radishes or the bottom of the head of the lettuce or just any of that stuff, you know, fruit rinds, banana peels are excellent. And so I just grew up like that. And when the milk carton got filled up every day or two, we would go empty it out in the compost and throw it out there. And then I also like my very first guest was this guy, Denny Cray from Florida. And he's really a runner, but he's really into healthy, nutrient dense food. And if you want the nutrients to grow in your vegetables, if you want that healthy organic food that you see at the farmer's market, but you want it on a regular basis, it all comes from that healthy soil and the plant being able to suck up those nutrients through its roots, the plant being able to grow. And healthy soil, to me, like one of the issues is it's expensive trying to find sources to put if you're going to have those deep beds. And so the easiest way for you to make it is to be collecting your compost, your scraps, your food scraps, your things. And I don't know, the thing I like about it is I'm not the biggest gardener. I don't always have time to do all that, but I can make compost because it's really easy. I mean, you just collect it. The first thing you need to do is find where you're going to collect it. I don't think milk comes in those cardboard things, so they always have to have that stupid anymore. So I don't know. We use ice cream gallon buckets, or we have some old cast iron enamel pans. A friend of mine uses a bucket. I mean, you can use any kind of container you want. I just like to use things that eventually, I mean, in the summer, you can wash them out pretty easily. We put them out in the rain and they get cleaned out. There's so many ways you can clean out your compost container. It doesn't usually smell. I leave one on the counter in my classroom all week and take it home on the weekend. And so collecting those fruit scraps, but back to Denny Cray. So he talked about their worm bin and vermiculture. Even that is not that difficult. The big things I learned last year, so I had a class guinea pig, and the guinea pig cage was on top of the worm bin, and it wasn't getting enough air. Like, that's the one key to compost. You have to make sure it gets enough air. You want a certain mixture of browns and greens. I mean, basically, you know, your colors kind of tell you. Greens. Now, Mike and I, we can turn a good batch of compost almost every 2 weeks in the middle of the summer when we have a lot of lawn clippings. You just want to make sure you're getting lawn clippings, if you're using your neighbor's lawn clippings, that they haven't sprayed any chemicals. I mean, we have 20 acres, so we have a big place. We have a fairly large lawn, so we have quite a pile of them. Now, come August, it's hot in Montana. The lawn doesn't really grow, so we're not mowing the lawn. And even, like, this was something people were interested in. We have, like, this little mini orchard, about 9 fruit trees, I think. And in the middle of that area, Mike ran out of gas in a lawnmower or something one day and didn't cut the middle, or who knows, he could have done it on purpose. And I thought he ran out of gas, but that grass that it was in the middle that kept growing was like 2 inches tall and fresh green lush grass all summer long. But the part where on the outside, the perimeter, where he had mowed it short, and then the last time, like, we didn't get rain for a long time, that part turned brown. But that stuff in the middle that was just a little bit taller just really held the moisture better. But even in a lawn, like, I don't know how many loads of manure we have thrown on our lawn, or they dug out this one area near us, like, full of peat. You don't see peat a lot. And
wow,
Mike had his backhoe. We hauled that peat everywhere. But any kind of fresh, natural thing that you can put on your lawn instead of chemical fertilizers, you don't need to use chemical fertilizers. And another big one a lot of my guests talk about, the dandelions is the first food that the bees eat. Dandelions aren't really a weed. Like, you should look at your lawn and see. What makes a lawn not healthy is not having good quality dirt, and it's going to burn up more. If it's a regular lawn, should be able to grow even in a drought situation, sort of, or maybe not in a drought situation, but there's native lawns and green seed that you can get in your area that doesn't need to be watered as much. That's going to grow no matter what you're
doing. You have to establish it, right?
And another thing that's been a recurring theme on my podcast is native landscaping. When you're doing your landscaping, is getting native plants, and they're going to respond also better to healthy soil. I mean, it all really comes down to what your food or what your plants, whether they're flowers are growing in, is that soil is healthy underneath them.
Yeah, so many people we talk to about native and regionally appropriate and stuff. It's like, you know, bringing tropicals into your garden is just going to require a lot of work. And I'm to the point in my life right now that I don't want to keep working so hard. So things just make more sense to do them the way nature intended. It's less hassle. It works with the flow. And we like that. We've been working on establishing our backyard, and we actually planted some of the sustainable grass seed. We've had a challenge getting it started. We got some of it going, but we're in Oklahoma where it's clay soil. So even with testing and augmenting it, we still got some work to do. But anyway, we're getting there. We're trying to do more of it as garden.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a great point. And I was thinking about that because one of my guests was this guy, Dave Salmon, down in New Mexico, and they've been in drought for way longer than the people in California, was telling me. And his business was successful. He actually went to school for horticulture to college in Colorado, and everything he learned when he opened his nursery wasn't working. And the reason he eventually developed this native landscape, native plant landscaping, was because his clients, he was making more money that way. He was more successful because they were more successful. And then he could also teach his employees who work there about the native plants. And that helped everybody because they had them in their yards. And that was just, it just made a more economical business model for him because things lasted longer. They grew better. They were naturally adapted to the climate. You know, having things that are acclimated to your climate is another big subject on my podcast, like seeds. Where do you get your seeds? It's kind of a little off topic, but the more locally grown seeds you can get, sharing your seeds, saving your seeds. We're having a big event here in Kalispell next weekend. Actually, it's their third year, where they have like a giant seed exchange. They developed this seed library. I never even heard of a seed library, but it's just like a book library where people trade seeds. And you can check out seeds, borrow them for a season, and maybe you borrow 5 heirloom tomato seeds, and then your promise is you'll bring 5 heirloom tomato seeds back. But you're going to end up with like 50 heirloom tomato seeds in every little cherry tomato or every tomato. Like, it's amazing how seeds replicate. And so just trying to get that diversity out there, but also you're going to do better. Every year it grows in your area, it's going to do better. Those seeds are going to, you know, what do they say? You should pick the fruit. Like if you want a tomato, you want to pick the best tomato that's like your ideal tomato to save the seeds from. And you can still eat the tomato even if you save the seeds from it, or the most ideal cucumber, you know, whatever trait you want from it. If it's the first one ready, or it's got the nicest skin, or it's the right size and shape. Like Mike, I don't know how many times he's won a prize at the fair because his potatoes are all the same size and shape, or uniformity, they call it, which I guess is something that you know your seeds are going to grow. Like it has to be like five tomatoes that are the same, but they have to be all connected on the same stem. He's got to bring the stem in, but just like different things like that.
How do you save the seeds from your food? I've never done that before, and I'd like to do that this year.
There's a great book I can give you. It's just a short PDF book. I can give you the link to that they give away for free. This guy, Bill McDormand, that like has specifics. I mean, tomatoes, that's what I'm thinking of, because when I went to the seed workshop, that's what they gave. They gave us all a cherry tomato, and we cut it, and you just kind of like squeeze the tomato together, and I think the pulp goes on a tray. And there's something about letting that pulp, I don't know, I want to say mold or turn to like a yeast or something, but even if you don't, even if you just take those seeds right there, just kind of wash them. We always save our pumpkin seeds, you know, from a pumpkin. Yeah. Kind of like clean them off and put them in a dry place. Mike saves pepper seeds. I've saved sunflower seeds, and you just dry for the sunflower heads. You just dry the head, you know, they kind of just shake off. They peel off, but you have to let it get to that point where it's going to go to seed. If you're growing sunflowers to pick for flowers, for bouquets,
Yeah. They're
not going to go to seed, and you're going to pick them before they open, whereas a sunflower, you know. So it just depends. This ones you're saving for seed. Carrots are very different. Last year, Mike let his carrots go to seed, and then they had to grow, bloom, and then I think he picked some, I don't know, I can't remember. Did he pick them in the fall? But I know they take like 2 years before you get carrot seeds.
Oh, because they seed from the top, from the plant.
Okay. Yeah, they seed from that, like, what's that called? Like the cone or the...
Or the ferny part. I don't know what you call it.
No, it's not the ferny part, but like the heads.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'm reaching back because when did I go to college? Like 20-something. I'm getting older. But so every plant is different, but there's a great PDF I can send you that has all sorts of information about seed saving. And there's a lot of good books out there.
Love to include some of those on the podcast notes.
It's pretty easy to do for most basic things.
Okay. Well, hey, that's been incredibly helpful. I'm going to actually try some of this stuff because we're going to try some other ways of gardening right now. Hey, we're at a great place to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Green Gap.
Editing podcasts can be, rough. Everyone knows that you'll spend at least double the time you use creating the podcast when editing it. Then there's the control freak factor and the gotta get it right the first time factor. And well, it's time to shove all that out the door and make your podcast soar with the Editor Corps. The Editor Corps is a talented, experienced team of podcast editors that have edited tens of thousands of hours of podcast content, and they're ready for yours now. Check out EditorCore.com because it's time to make your podcast soar. EditorCore.com. That's EditorCore.com.
There are many logos that you can look at around you, on your mobile device, your drive home, inside the boob tube, and thousands of other places. Only one conjures the answer, however, to the question, who you gonna call? In 1984, Ivan Reitman directed a special little feature film exploring the paranormal, the normal, and the comedic inside the city of New York. It was called Ghostbusters. It was deliberate. It was fun. It continues to receive stellar reviews even now 30 years later, and is the seed for many new efforts that feature the moniker Ghostbusters. How did the original win hearts? What do you think of the original 1984 romp that talks about a gatekeeper, a keymaster, a destructor, and the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man? Check out the perspective review of Ghostbusters 1984, directed by Ivan Reitman. PerspectiveReviews.com. That's PerspectiveReviews.com.
Hey, we're gabbing away on the Green Gab today with Jackie of Organic Gardener Podcast. And I'm learning a ton from you, Jackie. I'm like really ready for it to be spring so I can get out in my garden and get things going. And I'm really looking forward to this. We're gonna try something new in our garden this year because we didn't grow vegetables last year. So I'm excited to get some new ideas. And I'm kind of like you. I feel like I have a brown thumb, but every now and then I get something to go.
Well, since I started my podcast, I've just been planning more and doing more and having more successes because I learned these little easy tricks. Now, granted, you can't take my situation because, like, for me, planning something is me coming home and Mike being like, here, I got this bed ready for you, and him, like, putting the compost in it and getting it together. And when I forget to water it, he makes up for me. And he's always like, you know, you have to water. But I watered yesterday. He's like, you have to water every day in the summer. Like, he takes care of it. I mean, if it was me,
it's a good partnership.
I did grow some good stuff in my apartment this fall. And I did put some arugula in last July. That was just to die for come Thanksgiving. I was harvesting it in the snow at Thanksgiving and it was so good.
I didn't know arugula would grow in the snow. I guess it finishes up in the snow.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it wasn't really growing, but I finally got down there to harvest it and it had snowed and I was picking it in the snow and it was so delicious. And like in my apartment, I was eating like the tiniest, itty bittiest little leaves that were like the size of my pinky. But you know, five of them on a sandwich can just totally change the taste of your sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
But the big leaves I picked at Thanksgiving that had been out there all fall and had never gotten picked. And I thought they were going to, you know, I was going to go down there and it was dead and it was still there. They made like a whole salad and were just so good of giant leaves.
Nice. I feel there's nothing like your own stuff you've grown. You're right.
I totally fell in love with arugula when I went to celebrate my first 100,000 downloads of the Organic Garden podcast and I went to Paris. And I only ate out twice the whole time I was there, the day I got there and the day before I left. And the day I got there, I went and I got eggs and they served two eggs, no bread, I don't think, and the arugula salad. It was so good. There might have been bread. I don't remember. It was.
You just remember the arugula.
Yeah, I just remember the arugula. And you would get arugula. Like, I had this incredible apartment right across from this grocery store. And you could just go in and you would buy a tub full of arugula. Just baby arugula. And it was so good. You could just eat a whole salad that was just like, that's what the lettuce was just this baby arugula that was tender. And it wasn't as intense as some.
Yeah. So what are a couple of your other favorite podcasts? Obviously, you've got, what, 270,000 podcast listeners. You've got a lot of feedback, I would hope, from all these folks. And you've done a lot of episodes. So what are a few of your favorites?
Well, tying in with our talk, I mean, one of my top most downloaded, I think she's like two or three, she's always in the top 10 consistently, is this girl, Alyssa LaChance, who started a dirt rich composting and food scrap pickup business. And she lives right near me here in Montana, but she is like one of the number one. And I know she has very little social media out there compared to some other people. I mean, one of my all time favorites was Jean Martin Fortier from the Market Gardener up in Canada. Erin Bazankian, who wrote from Floret Farm last year. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she. Mm-hmm. Their farm's claim to fame is that they grow more blooms per acre. Like, I think her farm's only like 2 acres or 4 acres, but they grow thousands and thousands of flowers in this little area by practicing these special methods. And then, like, I have this real thing for millennials on my show. One of my favorite guests was this girl, Mandy Girth. I called her the CrossFit Gardener of 2015 because her and her husband, I don't know how they do it. They have like 100, they have CSA members. She goes to the market with this huge table full of food every week. She's got three kids that I'm pretty sure she said she homeschools, three little boys. And her husband, she's like, we're going to be our own interns. And they produce like prolific food. So getting to talk to her was just because it's not just talking to her, but she just, it's her feelings about the earth. It's just the things that she says and the way she puts them and her care for our planet that puts this passion. And it's funny because she went into art school and her husband met in art school. They're artists just like me, but they stumbled on this gardening thing and just worked with their family. And they kind of combined the whole art and family. And so she's one of my all-time favorite guests, I guess, if that's what you're asking.
Totally. So what's been the kind of most unusual guest you've ever had on the podcast?
The most unusual guest? I guess I'm just going to go with the first one that comes to my mind, is this woman, Jacqueline Freeman, who talked about treatment-free bees in, she's Northern Oregon or Southern Washington, somewhere on the Pacific Coast. And she wrote a book about, I want to say it's called The Song of Increase, about communing with, like, she just sits and learns about bees. But when you listen to her, she's so eloquent. And just to hear how she talks about watching the bees and knowing what the bees want and how to be totally treatment free. I don't know. She was one of the most unusual guests, I would say.
Sounds like a bee whisperer.
Yeah.
I had an experience with bees this past year. I never had a swarm in my backyard on one of my trees. Well, that cool tree. That was
so what did you do? What did you do? Did it just leave or did you have someone come get it?
And it was weird because I walked past my window and I saw this thing that looked like a growth at the fork of the tree. And it was a fairly newly planted tree. We had just put it in a few months before. And I finally walked out there and I look at this. There's actually a couple of videos on my Green Home Coach page that I'll link to the podcast because it was weird looking. It looked like a gourd on the fork of the tree. So I walk out there and I look and I'm like, oh my gosh, these are bees. So I go inside and I hop on the internet because I know that, oh my gosh, we have to protect the bees. I'm huge on that. And so I start Googling and I find this lady. I think she was called Queen Bree. She's a beekeeper here in the Oklahoma City area. And so I called her. I said, I've got this swarm of bees. What do I do? She goes, well, I can't come get them because I'm too far, but let me put something out on our Facebook group. And within 15 minutes, this gentleman had called me. He said, I'll come get your bees. And he rolled in with this, it looked like a shop vac, but he'd adapted it so he could suck the bees off the tree. And then, so he sucked them all off the tree and then he dumped them into a hive.
And no way.
It was the coolest thing. Yeah, it was the coolest thing. That was just fascinating. And he found a young queen. He had this little metal box that he caught the queen in. And he said it was a queen that was going off to start her own hive. And it was fascinating. I was like,
that is fascinating.
I know. I felt like,
bees are tough. And our bees swarmed and left and we have no bees left.
Aww.
And watching them and then they went, like, they covered this rock. I have videos, too. I'll see if I have them up on YouTube that I can link to. They covered this rock, and you could just see it. And then they moved to a tree up further, and then they would just keep going different places. And, yeah, wow. Learning how to be bees. And that can be expensive, so learning how to do it successfully. But, yeah, she was a great guest talking about bees like that. I've had a couple of great beekeeper guests.
Oh, and bees are so critical. I mean, we need the pollinators. And there's actually a group here in Oklahoma City. Actually, it's Oklahoma wide. That's the Oklahoma Conservation Coalition. And it's a group of all the different conservation groups and agencies and individuals. And there's even a church involved and just how they're working together. And it's exciting for me because I knew a lot of those people in St. Louis, but I didn't when I moved to Oklahoma City. So starting to find these people was just exciting to get to know them and, you know, just to have that connection with people that are interested in a lot of the same things and helping to get that word out, which you are doing a huge amount of getting the word out.
Oh, thanks. Well, I try and I just, I love getting to talk to people like you. Like, how cool is it that I have a friend in Oklahoma City now and just meeting different people. Like, to me, I know people complain about, oh, people are in their phone, but I, you know, you're connecting with other people, like-minded people. What's better than that? You're not stuck with just people based on your geography or even, like I said, meeting my neighbor who's right through the woods, a quarter mile through the woods, different people. I always tell this story about Facebook. There was this woman I worked with and she would come to get one of my students. And I thought she looked like this really staunchy, just gruff type of teacher. And she was Facebook friends with another teacher that I was Facebook friends. And before I know it, she's like one of my best friends now on Facebook. And like, we have so much in common and I never would have get that. And then, so then we would see each other in the hall and we'd say hi to each other. And like right there in the same school building, I had no idea. And because of Facebook, we connected like that.
Well, that's okay. That's how I met my husband. Or re-met.
Nice. You did? In a Facebook group?
Well, on Facebook. We dated when we were in high school, and then we reconnected as adults like 30-some-odd years later on Facebook.
Oh, I remember you telling me the story. Awesome.
Hey, hopefully we've all got a fun story like that. But so what do you hope to really impact the community, the people that listen to your podcast? I mean, what's your hope?
I mean, my husband and I are completely passionate environmentalists, dedicated educators. You know, our real hope is just to see people have access to food. People have the knowledge if they want to start a garden, like, you know, our kind of tagline is using earth-friendly techniques and helping you build your own organic oasis, and just letting people realize some shortcuts. Like, I never realized the impact deep beds could make. Like, my mom never had deep beds when we were kids. And I think one of the reasons she grows some vegetables. I mean, she's certainly a successful gardener, but I think she would have grown more and had bigger success for the same amount of work, for the amount of work she put in, especially if she would have known how deep beds could change it. Okay. And just, you know, anything we can do to help the animals, to help the environment, you know.
Hey, it's crucial. We have an interaction with our environment and our world that's necessary for our survival as well. So it's all related. I always kind of have to laugh when people are like, well, I'm not too concerned about the environment because I'm concerned about people. And it's like, but wait, they're kind of interrelated here, and they kind of go hand in hand.
Or people are like, I wouldn't mind if it was 1 degree. I don't like the cold. Who cares if it gets warmer? And I'm like, if the whole planet warms 2 degrees, that is a big deal. It's not like the difference between your low temperature only being 70 or something for the day, or your low temperature is not going to change from 34 to 32, 34 to 36. Yeah. That's not what they mean when they say the world's going to warm 2 degrees. Like, that drives me crazy.
It's
or
all
like all
balance.
The extreme weather events, like the news doesn't make the connection that, yes, we've always had extreme weather events, but in the last 10 years, the number of extreme weather events we are having has increased like a zillion fold. All right, maybe not a zillion fold, but, like,
but it's gone.
Maybe you had 10 events over 100 years, but three of them are in the last 10 years. Like, that's not an average spread. That's just way too many. And yeah, the
it's
number...
We have to deal with it. And, you know, we've got to deal with what's here right now as well as slow down what's coming. So I hear you.
Yeah. And what about our future?
Yep. Yep.
For that's, the kids.
And I, that's me. You see on my wall back here, that's my kiddos. And that is my why, you know, yeah. My kiddos. And yeah, I want them to have as good of a life or better life than what I've
right?
had.
Exactly.
So I feel very... very impassioned about leaving that legacy as good as I possibly can. So.
Cool. One thing I was going to talk about were food deserts. So maybe if your listeners,
we'll do another podcast.
Yeah,
definitely. I would love to continue this conversation and share it with our listeners on both sides. We bring some unique perspectives with the intersection of organic gardener and Green Gab and Green Homes. So I'm just excited that we've made the connection and excited that our audiences will have a chance to hear what happens. But yeah, just another way of looking at things. So I really appreciate your ability to come on and to share all this with our audience as well.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was really fun. I was a little intimidated in the beginning, so I'm glad that I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone.
It's kind of weird when you're on the other side of the interview, huh?
Oh my goodness. Totally. But I have learned a lot from my podcast. I really, really have. I've put a lot of it into play. And I don't know if I was going to say this, like that guinea pig we had in my classroom last year ate a lot of lettuce, and being able to just feed him. I mean, he eats more lettuce than I do, and I eat a lot of lettuce.
That's a lot of lettuce.
The kids would be like, we would fill his cage with dandelions because they would get these monster dandelion greens leaves over there. And the kids would fill his cage and they'd be like, he ate it all before we'd even go home at the end of the day. And they couldn't believe it, but he could eat.
Well, Jackie, definitely we're going to have to do this again. I'd love to talk about food deserts. That's a huge topic. And I'm sure there's a lot of other things we can talk about as well. So Green Gab listeners, stay tuned. We will look forward to having Jackie back on. And thank you so much for a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And everybody out there in Green Gab land, have an awesome day.
Thanks, Marla.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Green Gab Podcast and for joining us on our own personal green odyssey as we change the world one Green Gab podcast at a time. What did you learn about during this episode? Tell us now by visiting our website at greengabpodcast.com. And remember to connect with us via iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Links to do all of this are at our website, greengabpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, but more importantly, thanks for rocking it in green.